Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week on the Gary Hour.
What age were you when you got into sex work?
I was in high school. I was a teenager.
Did you find him attractive, the first guy?
I found the idea of being his sexual fantasy very attractive.
Right.
Of being the embodiment
right. Of,
like, sex personified.
The only little twist is that your parents don't know you're there. Probably no one knew you were there.
I mean, I didn't tell them about the dudes I was hooking up with after school recreationally either. You know what I mean?
True. Like, see, this is why I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm getting my mind open. This is great. Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talked to Caitlin Bailey. Caitlin is a former sex worker. She's a stand-up comedian. She puts on shows. And she also just got a new job as director of communications for a new national organization working to decriminalize sex work. We talk a lot about sex work, prostitution. She was doing it when she was 17 in high school still. So I don't want to spoil the whole episode, but this is a good one, and I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, a podcaster, a musician, voiceover artist, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments because they have an app that'll make your life easier and your productions so much better. Okay, thank you for listening. Check out the show notes for links to Caitlin and more information. And subscribe, tell your friends if you want, all that good stuff. But most of all, enjoy. Cool. All right. Caitlin Bailey, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It feels like it's been so long.
It's been a while since we've seen each other, but we've never talked in depth like this.
That's true. We've never done that.
We haven't really done it yet, but we will.
We're getting into it.
This is a good time because you just got a new job.
Yeah.
Director, communications director for legalizing.
Nope.
No.
Let me start over. Director of Communications for Decriminalized Sex Work.
Decriminalized Sex Work.
Yeah, we're a new national organization pursuing a state-by-state strategy to end prohibition of prostitution in the United States.
You want to legalize prostitution.
Decriminalize it.
Decriminalize it.
There is a difference.
What is the difference?
Well, I'll give you an example. Nevada is the only state in the union with legal, regulated prostitution, and they have the highest arrest rate per capita for prostitution.
How is that possible?
It creates a two-tier system. It forces women to work in regulated brothels where they have to register with the local sheriff as a registered prostitute. Mm-hmm. They have to get a state-mandated, publicly available STD test at their own expense every 2 weeks. They have to work 12 or 24-hour shifts. And there's no way to legally work in Vegas or Reno, the two largest markets for prostitution. So the police are super incentivized to crack down on the illegal sex workers working outside of the regulated brothels. And if you've ever been arrested for prostitution, you're not allowed to work in the brothels legally.
So what are they arresting you for? What's the charge?
Prostitution.
even though it's legal. Outside.
Well, no, it's not. It's not like across the board legal. It's only legal if you register at the sheriff's office.
Okay.
Work in a brothel, which are all male owned, right?
There's no female owned brothels there.
There are no female owned brothels in Nevada.
That's surprising.
But yeah. It's weird. It's almost like the boys club cooperates. So huh. So it creates all of these barriers that make it difficult for people to, it's impossible to work independently legally in Nevada. So you can't like work, you can't like set your own schedule.
I see an opportunity here for a female owned brothel in Nevada.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get your paperwork in order. And I think the, I don't know what the licensing fees are, but I know that they're extreme. There was a madam in New York that was trying really, really hard to work to open a brothel in Nevada, and she just couldn't get past the like wall of dudes that didn't want the competition. Oh. It's like pretty locked down.
Because I would imagine if
the competition's intense,
I bet.
Yeah,
I bet it's good business.
Yeah.
So you want to legalize it? You want to decriminalize it?
I want to decriminalize it. I want to end. I want to treat prostitution like any other business, right?
If so everyone will be registered?
No. Like when you decide to become an interior designer, you don't have to like register with the sheriff's office.
Would the women have to be STD checked?
I mean...
regulated?
Look, sex workers want to protect their own sexual health, right? We're uniquely incentivized to keep our shit clean, right?
Right.
That's been true. I want STD tests to be free and available and like super accessible for everyone. But I don't want to create, I don't want to turn sex workers into second class citizens by forcing them to do tests that we don't make everyone do and making that information available like they're not citizens.
Right.
I don't want to create an exception to HIPAA just because you're a filthy whore. Like that's bad logic.
Right.
And statistically, sex workers are not the spreaders of disease that we've been made out to be. We take our sexual health seriously.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to throw anyone under the bus, throw sorority sluts under the bus.
Okay, so you keep saying we.
Yeah.
I know you used to be a sex worker.
Totally.
Are you still?
No. Well, I mean, I'm getting married, so it's like, where do you draw the line?
Well, but, you can be both.
No. I mean,
not within the marriage.
I no longer engage in sex work. And personally, like, I think being a sex worker... in my case, an escort is a lot more like being a waitress than it is like being a Marine.
Mm.
But in this society, a once a whore, always a whore stigma.
Like,
you know?
like a Marine or a military.
Right. Yeah.
You're always a veteran.
Always a veteran. Right.
Okay. We'll get back to your current position.
Sure.
But now I'm totally curious about first, what age were you when you got into sex work?
I was in high school. I was a teenager.
You were a teenager. 17?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. I started working, like, months before my 18th birthday.
Right.
And it was actually in Raleigh, North Carolina, like, 2004, 2005.
Okay.
And it was actually a local escort that, like, was like, hey, I see that you're new. Do you want to get a cup of coffee or whatever? And she sat down with me, and she asked for my ID.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told her I was underage, she had me blacklisted from all of the sites that I was using to post.
So you found the sites.
Until I turned 18. And then she was like, you know.
Then she welcomed you.
Welcome to the club, baby whore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but she didn't want me working before my 18th birthday, not just for my own protection, right? But for the protection of the entire community. Because like if I was caught, now I'm an underage child sex slave.
Right, it would bring attention.
And yeah, the FBI gets involved. Like it's crazy.
Right. Yep, she wants to protect the industry.
Of course. And, yeah, and also she's like, you should be 18.
Right. Like, well, you got into it yourself.
Yes.
Younger than that.
Yeah, like 17 and a half.
So you're in high school.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to set the scene here. You're in high school. You're in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah.
How did you end up getting into that?
I Googled Raleigh, North Carolina escort, and then I read the FAQ section on the website that... clients and providers, as they were called,
right,
posted to like communicate with each other and got the lay of the land.
So you were just curious,
yeah.
And why were
you? I didn't have like a drug habit to support. I wasn't taking a bunch of AP classes,
and so it wasn't for the money.
Mm-mm.
Was it for just your curiosity?
I deeply suspected that we were just wrong about this. That like the story out there of like what it means to be a whore with like that people were just wrong.
The stigma.
The stigma. Yeah. You're just wrong. We've been wrong about this for 6,000 years. And now with this new organization, I'm going to prove it.
Mm-hmm. But what was your experience with sex before that?
I'd lost my virginity to another boy on the debate team.
Mm-hmm. What age, if you don't mind?
16.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had had sex, not much.
Sure. I mean, well, we had a lot of sex that year.
Making up for lost time.
Yeah. Get it in there.
Yeah.
Sure.
So was he still your boyfriend when you started getting into sex work?
Mm-hmm.
Did he know about it?
No.
Right. Yeah. I imagine that would be a lot for.
Yeah, it was a lot. And so, you know, in my, black and white teenage brain, I was like, this isn't cheating. There's this wall of.
Compartmentalize it.
Totally. Yes.
So you're like, this is a job. It's not cheating.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a curiosity. Even then, he described me, and I think would describe me to this day still, as like having a happy-go-lucky fascination with the underworld. Mm-hmm. It's the same instincts that got me involved in comedy. You know?
Right.
Of like,
Daredevil.
What's this deep, dark crevice of society all about? There's no safety net. Whee!
Yes. But there's a lot, it's a lot more dangerous than comedy. I mean,
it isn't, actually.
Really?
There was way more sexual violence in my case in comedy than there ever was in sex work.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you weren't nervous at all when you started to peruse the websites and...
No, I all of my clients had to do a lot of reference checking in order to book an appointment with me, so...
But you didn't have a boss or a pimp or a John or anything? Yeah. It was just you.
Yeah, it was so much better than having a boss. Oh my God. When I started working at Starbucks, like at 22 years later, and they were like, clean up that human shit. I was like, I don't consent to that, man.
Right. Oh my God. I've waited tables before.
It's the worst.
It is.
Yeah, totally. And that's why people don't like working in brothels, right? Because like the self-selected group of people that choose to do this work,
right
are like they're kind of like comics in that they're lone wolf people.
Right.
You know, you corral them into a brothel, you give them a boss and like a bunch of shitty restaurant rules or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, fuck this, man.
All right. So what was your first experience like? Did you put up a profile?
I did. Offering? So I put up an ad and I got like over 100 emails.
Did you put a picture up?
No.
No picture at all.
This is 2004, right?
It's okay. Just, so was it dial up?
Yeah, right. Yeah, basically. So, you know, like a little light description. I pretended that I was a 20-year-old communications major and because I didn't want to freak anyone out. And also, like, I was never a young-looking teenager. Like, I couldn't have marketed myself as a barely legal, even though I wasn't legal. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't.
Because that's like a certain genre.
Yeah, right. That's like an itty-bitty teeny ten. I was like a long-titted, like, mature-looking person. So
and obviously your parents didn't know about this.
No, of course not.
Right.
And so, you know, I posted an ad. I got hundreds of emails with this like Yahoo account that I set up under a fake name. And I asked for people's real name, where they worked, and two industry references, which is other women that they had seen and presumably not like robbed or killed or upset.
And so, they were okay giving you this information?
Yeah, that was standard procedure. That's what I learned reading the FAQ section.
Oh, nice.
And like, and that's how I got connected to that woman that took me out for coffee and forced me to stop.
So we'll get
back. She was a reference check, yeah.
We'll get back to the story, but she took you out for coffee to get you to stop.
No, yes. Well, she didn't know that when she took me out
for
coffee.
You're like, I'm going to get hired to a bigger job.
There's a community. There's a camaraderie. Like, you know, when older comics take younger comics out, they'll be like... Yep. Hey, kid.
I'll show you the ropes.
Yeah, I'll show you the ropes. It was like that kind of thing. She was like, hey, I see that you're new.
Right.
You know, it's my turn.
Okay, so you're 17. You sound super savvy.
Yeah.
Maybe 16?
17. No, 17? Definitely 17. I lost my virginity at 16. But, okay. Yeah.
It wasn't that busy of a year.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so
you... Still had classes, man. Like, it was busy.
Yeah, right. You're going to school.
I got more done in a day back then than I do now. It's like, I can't... do laundry, take out the trash, and do my job in the same day. That's like overwhelming. And then back in the day, I was like 4 AP classes, running my own business, home for dinner, and like doing a school play. Like it was just like,
okay,
so much was happening.
So you put the ad out. You got 100 emails.
Yeah.
You went through them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ask them to send pictures? Did that
no,
matter?
No, of course not.
Didn't matter what
they looked
like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happens? How much vetting do you do? Do you
I told you, real name, mm-hmm. right? Where they worked. I confirm that, right? I call the company and right. ask for the name that was given to me.
Yeah.
And if whoever answers the phone is like, yeah, sure, let me transfer you, I hang up. And if they're like, so-and-so doesn't work here, then I like never respond to that email again.
So you must have found more than one client. You must have found at least 20. Oh,
yeah, of course. 100. And so we, you know, and then it becomes a scheduling issue. And I like...
So you were willing to take on all those clients. You weren't just looking for like one.
No.
You were just starting a whole business.
I started a whole business.
With one ad.
Yes, with one ad.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah, but this is the golden age, right? Like this is the post-cell phone, pre-smartphone era of the like unregulated internet where I was able to do all of this reference checking.
Right.
When Sesta Fosta passed in April, like all of the ecosystems that sex workers built for themselves on the internet, of which this was one of them, went away overnight.
What is Sesta Fosta? What is that?
It's the stop and it's what got me like, it's what reactivated me in politics, right? Because before I was like, I'll be a mouthy whore. I'll do my one woman show. I'll tell my jokes on stage. And then that passed and it's like, fuck it. I'm putting my armor back on and getting back into this street fight.
Nice.
It's the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. It was signed by Donald Trump into law in April. And it basically opens up all web platforms to criminal liabilities if any one of their users is, quote, promoting prostitution. So Backpage went away. Eros went away. Like all of these websites
right.
that people were using to advertise and connect with clients and reference check disappeared overnight.
I'm surprised he would do that because I would imagine a lot of his friends would be pissed off about that.
Well, great point. He's happy raping actual children in all of the and the little Teen America contest or whatever it is.
Yes, Miss Teen Trump
Miss
America.
Miss Teen Trump America. Gross.
Okay, so you had probably at least 20 clients now.
Sure, yeah.
What was the first one like? You're 17 years old. You set up...
It was... hilarious and awkward and empowering and an adrenaline rush.
How old was the guy?
All of the things. Oh gosh, I don't know, 40s, okay. somewhere in there.
So he's 17, he's in his 40s.
Right.
He's got so much more sexual experience than you.
Sure.
And also just being a woman, the odds are that he's more physically strong than you. So you're putting yourself in a subordinate position or a dangerous position physically.
Which is the same position that I put myself in with every frat boy that I hooked up with in college, every male person, like even right now. I mean, Gary, like I've been taking Muay Thai lessons, but I invited you into my home and you've got like a foot and like at least 5 or 6 pounds of muscle on me.
You could probably give me a pretty good fight.
I mean, but come on. Like
I'm a thin guy. I can't. I haven't gotten
You're also a coward. I mean, like, let's be honest.
I'm a pacifist. I haven't fought in years.
So the likelihood of this guy physically attacking me after successfully seeing two other escorts in the area and being respectful enough with them for them to provide positive references.
You feel like he's more vetted than any of your dates.
He was way more vetted than any rec sex that I ever had for the rest of my life.
Right. The only little twist is that your parents don't know you're there. Probably no one knew you were there.
I mean, I didn't tell them about the dudes I was hooking up with after school recreationally either. You know what I mean?
True. Like, see, this is why I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm getting my mind open. This is great.
Weirdo. Okay.
So what do you do?
Mom, I'm just going to blow our next door neighbor. No, it's cool. Like, he's my age and, like, I'm doing it for fun. It's chill. Bye. Like, I mean, if you can't find me, I'm probably in his backyard.
I mean, I read your mom was liberal. So. Okay, so what do you do? You meet in a hotel room?
Yeah.
He pays for the hotel,
I imagine. For the hotel room, yep.
And did you have to get a special dress or anything?
I thought so, which is what made the first appointment so awkward and uncomfortable, because I was like, let me get into costume.
Yeah.
But it turns out that you don't have to fucking do that. No. Mm-hmm. Guys are happy if you meet them at the door in a towel.
You could roll up like totally us fine. And just like a sweater and a t-shirt.
Yeah, they're fine with that, actually, it turns out. Lingerie is for women.
Nice. So what happens when, were you nervous?
I was excited. It felt like audition jitters or like opening night jitters, you know, of like, you know, am I going to be able to pull off this performance?
Right.
Kind of thing.
But no fear.
No.
No, like real fear for your safety.
No. No, like, I don't know if part of that is being a teenager, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we...
Right, we're immortal.
Right, yeah, right, yeah, we're, yeah. You're immortal. It's like, yeah, I can drive 110 miles an hour down my home street.
We're the exception.
Right, exactly. Worst case scenario, my mom finds out I was speeding. Yeah. Not that I wrapped myself around this tree. That's not a thing that happens.
That's the beauty of the beginner's mind, you know?
I swear you just, to God, like, right.
The ignorance is amazing.
Yeah, teenagers, they are shaped so much like adults.
Yeah, but not that beginner's mind.
Man, so yeah, I would, so there was definitely the like age-appropriate feelings of immortality,
right?
Like there's a reason we recruit soldiers at 17, 18 years old.
Right.
And there was also the rational like vetting. Like it really was actually safer than any of the like hookup culture stuff that I ended up doing after that, right? Because I lost my virginity to a kid that I knew, right?
We'd that be you dating, liked.
That I liked, that I loved, you know, that we met on the debate team. It was very sweet. We were like nerds together.
You found him attractive.
Of course, right? And then I started doing sex work like immediately after that, which was this very negotiated sort of like formal thing where like I was the professional in the room and I set the rules. And then after that, I went to college and got into the hookup culture where like dudes my age were very comfortable treating me with absolute disrespect and disregard and like trying to do things like slip the condom off and like being an asshole. And I never experienced that with a client because if a client ever did that, I would blacklist him.
Right.
I'd blow up his spot, you know, like he was a, and so it was a real interesting like sort of juxtaposition of like, oh, things are not what they seem. Things are not what you think they are.
So you're facing that stigma head on and you're like getting these realizations.
Right. Yeah.
Did you find him attractive, the first guy?
I found the idea of being his sexual fantasy very attractive.
Right.
Of being the embodiment of like sex personified.
So it got you in the mood enough.
Yeah, of course. But like that was sort of always the thing is like, I liked being this goddess more, and it wasn't really about me wanting to have sex with that guy so much as it was wanting to be that guy's sexual fantasy. And that was the attraction. That was the Eros energy, dare I say.
Your like desire, sort of fuel, you're feeling empowered.
My desire to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. So did you do this for the rest of your high school?
Yeah. Yeah. And I quit when I went to college because then, you know, my schedule got more complicated.
You must have made a lot of money.
I did. Yeah.
How often were you doing it in high school?
I was like 3 or 4 days a week.
3 or 4 days a week?
Yeah.
How much were you charging?
A lot of money.
A lot.
Yeah. I was at the top of the market. Wow. So I looked at what everyone else was charging and I added $50 basically because I wasn't working volume.
Right.
Like, I was busy.
So you went up instead of down. You're like, I'm not going to undercut him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was like, I wasn't interested in like, you know, squeezing a bunch of clients in. I wanted to have like vetted ongoing relationships.
Right.
So I did that.
Amazing. So what do you, how do you hide all this money from your parents?
I got a shitty job at a shitty restaurant where I was sexually harassed by my managers and then couldn't report it for fear of anyone finding out about the sex work stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. So talk about sexual disrespect outside of the sex industry.
And talk about
people respected my boundaries as an escort.
Right. And talk about a busy high school kid. Jeez.
Yeah, no. So these assholes, I mean, like they're still shitty restaurant managers. So, you know, I guess there is some justice in this world.
So your parents, they know now what was happening.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Okay. And I read online that your mom is very liberal, but your dad is ultra conservative.
Super conservative. Yeah.
I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but I am curious how a marriage like that even works.
Great questions.
Yeah.
They have such a good relationship with their dog. And they've,
the dog is the object of their mutual love.
The dog is the object of their mutual love. And like they also have, I mean, they've been together for going on like 35 years now. And they have that sort of like interdependence that any relationship does. Like my father hasn't seen a checkbook in 30 years. Like I don't think he would know.
I like how you use interdependence instead of codependence.
I think codependence is probably a more accurate term.
It does sound more negative.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, they, I mean, like, they're a couple, and they like to make fun of each other, and, you know, my mom donates to the ACLU and Planned Parenthood and her Unitarian Church. Yeah, my dad shoots chipmunks and probably still donates to the NRA, even though he said that he stopped.
Right.
So I like to say, between the two of them, they have the whole Bill of Rights covered.
So you stopped prostituting when you went into college. Yeah. When did your parents find out?
When I wrote my one-woman show about it a couple of years ago.
Okay,
and so promoted the show. So yeah, they never, like, this didn't have to come out. This right. could have been a secret that I kept.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do that.
So did you Part tell it, them or did you just invite them to the show and they found out in the seats?
It's actually a funny story. And it's a cowardly story. I wrote the whole show and then promoted it. Kind of like knowing in the back of my mind that my parents also have access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't address it directly. So they found out by reading the rave reviews.
Oh no.
Yeah.
So they found out after other people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And what was the reaction?
Well, my mom said, I can't believe you sold your body. Mm-hmm. And I said, I didn't. I still have it, which is an objectively true statement. And then my dad and I had an interesting conversation because his mother didn't want him joining the army, mm-hmm. right? And he did that at 17.
Mm.
And so we both have, like, in our bones, kind of a fuck you, watch this essence.
But did he see that? Did he see himself in you with that?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah. Eventually he did.
Did you have to point that out?
No. No. He's known me since I was an obnoxious baby. Like,
yeah.
He knows me. And he knows the, I'm a contrarian by nature.
Right.
And so I think he understands now, like, he's 40 years older than I am. You know, he was born like poor in like rural Kansas and grew up, as a white man in America and then worked hard to give me the accoutrements of like an upper middle class life. So freedom has always meant very different things to both of us,
mm-hmm,
right? Like
right.
He's pro-choice because he watched his sister's friend die and watched his sister become a mother at 15. And the impact that that had on
it impacted him personally. So
right, but
so
like,
he's not that conservative if he's pro-choice.
Right, but he thinks it's murder.
Okay,
but he also like did murder for money. Like so,
right,
like
right.
That's what being a soldier
yeah.
is on a fundamental level. So it's not that he doesn't think that abortion is murder. It's that he's fine with murder actually. So it's kind of a weird. Like, I think we see each other clearly, like,
right.
You know, a soldier and a sex worker being like, we've seen.
And maybe since you were a baby, he saw like your stubbornness and
yeah.
your fighting, your
yeah.
fight. He must not have come to this right away, though.
No, but I wasn't there for that process.
Right.
You
they
know?
Read it online.
Yeah.
And then did they
I
call you?
I live in New York.
Right.
Yeah. I went home and we had this conversation.
They didn't even call you and say, wow, look,
no,
we read.
No.
They held
no,
it in.
No, they held it in. We're mm-hmm. good wasps in that way.
Barrel it all up yeah. inside.
Yeah, we're all going to get cancer. It's fine.
So you went home and were you expecting the convo to happen?
Yeah. And I was dreading it in some way because I don't think of this as a mistake. I wouldn't trade the perspective that sex work has given me mm-hmm. for anything. But I knew that my father would see it as a personal failure. As a man, right? As a provider, as like a patriarch.
But you mentioned that you grew up upper middle class.
I did.
So he did provide.
He totally provided. I have no college debt. I have the best cowboy boots money can buy. Like,
right.
You know.
And you're probably making more money than he was, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, but we do that to men. You know, we tell them that their wife and their daughter's body is something for them to govern and control. You know, we don't actually accept female autonomy, especially sexual autonomy in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that he had to get over. That
yeah.
it's, you know, in the same way that his mother had to get over her son's choice to become a soldier. You know, he wasn't drafted.
Did he ask you if you were going to do it again?
No.
He never asked that?
No.
Did it harm your relationship?
It's
with him or your mom?
Colored our relationship. No, my parents are fine. They're fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It colored your relationship with each of them?
No, my mom and I have always had a tense relationship. So like it was just like one more thing, you know,
right,
that she couldn't understand. But with my dad, I think it actually freed him to see me less as a little girl and more as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, he was, I think, more open about sharing the hard parts of his perspective and was less invested in that irritating thing that dads and dudes do in mixed company, dare I say, of like protecting me from profanity or, you know, edgy jokes or like hard realizations.
Right, trying to have like a soft environment
right,
for you.
Right, yeah, to protect his little girl.
Right, from, there's women around, don't cuss.
Right, yeah, exactly, and all that bullshit and everything that it entails.
That's all kind of old-fashioned now.
Well, he's pretty old. So right, right. Like,
yeah. Fascinating. So did you end up doing it again after college?
Yeah. I ended up working here, actually, with...
In New York.
In New York. Mm-hmm. Not as an escort. I did sugaring, which is... It's a new name for a very old thing, but I found one client mm-hmm. who committed to supporting me for years, actually.
Years.
Yeah. And it was so interesting because when we started, he wasn't married, mm-hmm. you know? And so I did that, like, the rules thing that they tell you to do where it's like, you know, I didn't
set the boundaries.
I set the boundaries mm-hmm. and I didn't return his calls if he called after Wednesday. I was never as available as he wanted me to be. I made him wait until like the fourth or fifth date before consummating our relationship. And then he was hooked. Just like they said they would be in the books that they published in the 1950s about like how to rope in a dude.
So you nagged him for a while.
Yeah. I nagged him for a while and he was hooked. But he was unmarried when we started.
Mm-hmm.
And we very sporadically saw each other because I was making comedy such a priority and like he was fairly busy and I was very strict about like, I will not cancel shows for you, but I will protect time that we schedule, essentially.
Was he allowed to come to a show?
No. but he would have to book things like, you know, a week or so in advance or whatever. And he was really bad at doing that. So I ended up just getting these monthly checks without seeing him all that often. And then, he got married. And
so wait, this is a salary job?
Yeah.
So how do you set that up with him? You set it up like, all right, you'll pay me this much per mm-hmm. month and I'll see you X amount of times.
Right. But the X amount of times never materialized mm-hmm. because like we were just so bad at scheduling things.
That's very New York.
Right. Yeah. So hard. But like, yeah, I was a consultant was the official title.
Uh-huh.
So I was an independent contractor, but I was on payroll.
So he was allowed to call you even if you couldn't meet.
Of course. Yeah. We're still in touch. I think of him as a friend. Mm-hmm. Like I think of him as like a good old boss I used to have. Where, like, things were fine.
But when you would meet up, was it guaranteed he would have sex?
Well, yeah, until he got married. And then that shifted our relationship, interestingly enough. Like, this was something that we never really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But we would get together, and all of a sudden, we weren't having sex anymore. And I was like, and there, you know, there's part of me.
What would you do when you got together?
You'd cuddle and talk and mm-hmm. he would tell me what I assume is like the most lionized version of his professional achievements that probably his wife and everyone else in his life would call bullshit on. And I was just like, fascinating.
So instead of treating you like a shrink where he's telling you mm-hmm. all of his sorrows and stuff.
Yeah.
He's bragging to you.
Yeah. He's bragging to me mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. And it was kind of a strange, like, up-close window into, you know, the 1%. Like, looking at that psychology and that lifestyle and that...
Was it the power you think he liked? Like, what's getting him off about that?
I think he fancied himself a philanthropist. I think he genuinely was and genuinely thought of himself as like helping a struggling artist.
He's supporting an artist.
He's supporting an artist directly.
Right.
Not like all that bullshit charity money that just gets spent on asking people for more charity money.
He gets to actually see.
He gets to see up close my professional development, you know, like the one woman show and the stuff.
Do you mind if I ask how much he was sending you per month?
It was a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
More than $3,000?
Yes.
More than five?
At five.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to work. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I ran an Airbnb because dependency can, you know, really change the psychology. Like being vulnerable makes you vulnerable. So I immediately started running an Airbnb, but I used that like startup money to get myself into a sustainable housing situation and started the Airbnb, which was also, you know, flexible and something that I could work around and like gave my whole energy to all of the projects that I was working on.
Yeah, the artistic projects.
The artistic projects, which, I mean, you know, you're an artist. They're infuriatingly nebula, like
they never end. Yeah, it's never like, oh, I'm done.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get that satisfaction. Always have homework. Always. Yeah. So would he come to you when you would meet? He knew where you lived.
Yeah, but he wouldn't come to my apartment. Because I always had guests. No, he would get. It's actually funny. We would meet at some of the nicest hotels in the city, and then I would take all of those toiletries to my Airbnb.
Right.
And now that I'm working as a political operative, it's just shitty Holiday Inns. So like my Airbnb goodie bag has like really taken a nosedive in terms of like what soaps are available.
Did you have a boyfriend at all during this?
On again, off again. Yeah. I had some relationships.
And would you tell the...
Yes. Yeah. I believed in full disclosure after my teenage thing, which I felt guilty about not telling my first boyfriend about what happened. So I believed in full disclosure after that. Also to prevent violence, you know, like the only time I really like feared for my life in bed with a man was when I first moved to New York. I started dating very seriously. This is before I started sugaring, like before at that point I hadn't done sex work for 7 years. And I started dating this Irish chap. And 2 months into our relationship, I told him that I used to be an escort. And he freaked the fuck out.
Yeah.
And so...
you told him in person?
Yes.
I would have told him over the phone.
Well, I just never slept with anyone again that didn't already know. Right. And that seemed to solve the problem.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he freaked out and you were scared he was going to get physical?
No, he did get physical.
He did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you report his ass?
No.
Why not?
Sex workers can't do that.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't matter how long
until it's legalized.
Until it's decriminalized.
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 Wow. Okay. So you had this. Do you call him a sugar daddy?
I hate that word.
Is that a bad term?
I hate it. I mean, like, that's the word. You're not wrong. Like, that's. I called him a patron.
Patron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Because that's really more what it felt like.
Right.
You know, and I mean, like, you know, everyone knows Leonardo da Vinci was fucking his. Right. Patron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when he got married first, Well, before you kept him through all your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine if you were like getting with a guy and you liked somebody and then you told him, some guys were like, oh, I can't deal with that.
Yeah. And I didn't date those guys.
Right. Yeah. So when he got married,
mm-hmm.
did he
did not tell me.
He didn't tell you.
No.
The checks kept coming.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the checks stop?
They stopped. The hilarious story. He got so he got married, mm-hmm. right? And he got in trouble with his wife. Nothing to do with me, but he got caught flirting with somebody else in Las Vegas, and the fight just kept escalating. And so he sat down with his attorney and was like, walk me through what might happen if there was a divorce.
Wow.
And so the attorney was like, well, first of all, you have this consultant on your payroll that maybe shouldn't be. And so to protect himself, that ended. And it just so happened to coincide with the relationship that I'm in now escalating. But when I started this relationship, I was still on this guy's payroll, and that was known and understood and accepted.
So your fiancé?
My fiancé.
Your fiancé knew mm-hmm. that this guy could have sex with you whenever he wanted.
Yeah.
Part of the deal.
Part of the deal.
So I'm guessing this guy
did. But like, my fiancé also understands fundamentally that mm-hmm. he doesn't own my body even now, even though I'm not on this guy's payroll.
Right.
So
do you guys have an open relationship?
We don't. I mean, we have a monogamous relationship, but right. like but sexual fidelity is not the glue holding this ship together.
Right.
Like, so we are both open to a future where there are other sexual partners. So we're open to an open future.
Right.
Basically.
But if you want to start prostituting, you're going to have to clear that with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I would want it to be honest. Just like if he started a business, I'd want him to be like, hey, so I want to start this business.
Right, right.
I'm going to be in China every week. You know, like that's...
Because you're partners now.
We're partners, yeah. Exactly. But it's a partnership issue, not a I own your body
right. yeah.
issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because everything in a partnership, everything you do will affect him.
Sure. And vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's something that I understand now that was like both something that I didn't understand and also something that wasn't true when I was like a teenager dating. You know what I mean? It's
right.
like 2 17-year-olds fucking is not a partnership where you have to clear every decision. Like, should I go to college, Johnny? Like, don't be that person.
No, because you're right. living with your parents.
Exactly.
You're in a partnership with your parents, really.
Right. Yeah, so, but the power dynamics there are pretty fucked up.
I'll bet. So with the sugar guy, what do I call him?
Call him my patron.
Your patron.
Yeah, sure.
So with your patron, he obviously didn't tell his wife about you.
Mm-mm.
So she had no idea.
Yeah.
So he was basically whatever.
Well, he was making a lot of choices that I wouldn't have.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're still in touch with him?
Very casually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like we had drinks a couple of months ago. I texted him about this new job,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. He feels like a friend.
Yeah. But like a very, like an acquaintance, you know, yeah. like it's not, we don't text every day.
So there's something to this because there's so much stigma.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of living a double life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much stigma that you can't tell a majority of the people in your life that you're doing that.
That's not true anymore. That is true for most people that do this work. And it was certainly true for the first decade mm-hmm. After I decided to go to the dark side.
Yeah.
But
so you tell
I have,
people.
My job description is that I'm the director of communications for decriminalized sex work. So
it doesn't necessarily mean you've ever done it.
No. And I work with colleagues who haven't, you know, like our mm-hmm. attorney went to law school to decriminalize sex work and she's never sold sex. And we have a therapist that's worked with trafficking victims for 20 years and she's never sold sex. And we have an executive director who couldn't sell sex if he tried. So like it's, you know, we absolutely, but part of my job is being open about my history. But even before I took this job, I had designed my life around surrounding myself with people that knew about this work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a form of self-protection. I think that, you know, you become more vulnerable the more isolated you are. And so if you can't tell anyone in your life about what your job is, you can't report your rapes. You can't report domestic. You can't do any of those things. And I learned that lesson the hard way, telling this, like when I told my ex that choked me, the Irish dude, when I told him about this secret, it was a secret. And that really limited my choices. And so I decided never again.
Right. Well, it's so brave. It takes so much courage to do that because of the stigma, a lot of people will be like, whoa, Caitlin, I cannot hang with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Even friends, I'm sure.
We're not friends. That never, I mean, like, it'd be weird if a comic did that, right? Like, can you imagine, like, a stand-up comic being like, I am fine with drug addicts and rapists, but a whore is a bridge too far.
Right, yeah. Yeah. But, like, imagine just other people, you know.
No, it's something that is absolutely frowned upon in society. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the misconceptions. And I think a lot like where the LGBT community was in the 1950s and 60s, because of the stigma and the shame that
makes
that
it
causes,
worse.
It makes it so much worse because people won't tell you, they won't come out and dissuade you of your dumb ideas about like what it means to be a gay person for fear of outing themselves. So
it's the same with addicts too.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like, I think that, we've told ourselves this lie since the 19th century and the progressive era and like white slavery of like what it means to be a prostitute. And we've created so much stigma and so much shame and so much harm in outing yourself as a sex worker that we've just let that lie continue.
Right.
Because in order to combat it, you have to put yourself in pretty grave danger.
Is there a common personality trait between...
It's the oldest profession. It's always taken all kinds of kinds.
All kinds of women.
All kinds of kinds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, clients and sex workers.
How about male sex workers? Have you encountered them?
I have, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So most male sex workers, men are usually the clients. There are female clients, but they're rare. But I've absolutely met male sex workers, and I'm starting to connect with them more and more on Twitter, because of Twitter. So, Twitter connects all kinds of people.
Well, imagine with this new job, you're going to meet all kinds of new people.
Yes, yeah, I'm really excited.
What do you think you're going to do? I mean, this could lead to so much. I mean, I could see a book happening.
Sure, I'm working on a book right now. It's a collection of personal essays.
About your experiences
with all kinds of things, but yes, sex work is an element of that. But I talk about being a comic. I talk about being an activist. I talk about being a soldier's daughter. I talk about being a New Yorker. You know, I like to say again, like being a sex worker is a lot more like being a waitress than it is like being a Marine. It's not this all encompassing identity. I've done other things.
It is an interesting comparison because you could be as a waiter when I was doing it, you can be made to feel like a servant. Or you can like turn it around in your head and be like, no, I'm not a servant. I'm like the bartender. I'm like giving them what they want.
Exactly. So
it's all in your attitude.
I think it's a lot in your attitude. And it's also a lot about, stratified like social status. Like even within the service industry, like, you have, cashiers at fast food restaurants and you have sommeliers. They all work in the food industry. So like the sex industry is similarly stratified with everything in between.
Yeah, I've always found it interesting that the waiter is treated like a servant, but the bartender is treated like a god.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Makes no sense.
Addicts is the answer.
Interesting, yeah. So is there a difference with the male sex workers?
I don't know. I feel like I haven't met enough folks and I haven't been doing academic evaluative research to speak with any authority on that. But like, we're all pretty stigmatized. But I think that there is an element of male privilege that like, when a dude tells you he's a sex worker, it doesn't have the same kind of like gut punch.
You assume that he's satisfying other gay men.
Yes. Yeah. That is the assumption. Yeah. And like, sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's not, you know, like one of my good friends actually is sort of like a cis straight dude that's attracted to femme women, like both trans and cis, and he works in the porn industry. But yeah, he hasn't. It just doesn't. You know what? I don't know. I can't speak to the male experience because it isn't mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with this new job, you're basically going to be lobbying.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some lobbying. We're going to be doing public education. So it's
Can it be federally legalized or does it have to be state by state?
It has to be state by state. Yeah.
It has to be state by state. But if it's done state by state and the federally, it's not
recognized. There's no federal law against prostitution. There's a federal law.
Against marijuana.
Yes. Yeah, right. The federal law against prostitution would be the Mann Act, which would be taking a woman over state lines.
The Mann Act?
The Mann, M-A-N-N.
Okay.
That sounds
terrible.
Yeah. The Mann. Hilarious, actually. It really is the Mann. It's historically,
named after somebody?
Yeah, some dude, Mr. Okay. Mann, presumably.
Mr. Mann.
Mr. Mann with the Mann Act. So that's a federal law about, it's, you know, the Interstate Commerce Act, essentially. Mm-hmm. That says that you can't take a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. It was famously used against, that boxer who had a white girlfriend.
Right,
Yeah, so it's like been misused
right.
the whole time.
It's one of those loose laws that you can...
It's one of those loose laws, and now it's actually being applied for single women traveling alone. Are being like targeted and asked and subjected to more scrutiny as part of this like anti-trafficking hysteria. Like the Marriott Hotel just trained all of their employees to watch out for single women to see if they were trafficking victims. If they did such nefarious deeds as ask for more towels or sit at the bar alone. So like there's something happening. And what I know as somebody who studied this issue through my podcast, The Oldest Profession, is that when a society cracks down on its whores, it actually cracks down on the freedom of movement and freedom of expression of women in that society. Right. So that's a pattern we've seen over and over again, and we're living that now, which is one of the reasons that I want to do this work. And then
so
the
it's
other,
not a federal issue, no the matter other who
federal,
president.
Well, the other federal issue is the SESTA-FOSTA issue, but that's got to be... That has to be a future thing that we deal with. We have to take care of the criminal, like the police officers arresting sex workers.
Right.
That's a local police officer issue.
Yeah. And do you think decriminalizing will bring some of the drugs out of it?
Yeah, I do. Because I think like black markets create like violence and abuse and exploitation. So right. I think that if you separate like a lot, you know, part of the reason that like drugs and sex are intertwined is because they're both criminalized. So you need people that are able to circumvent laws. Like, so yeah,
and it becomes part of that stigma. You
exactly.
live that secret double life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So although I will tell you that, you know, the hardest drug users I know, are all investment bankers, but you know, that's because
that's,
they have
that's
money.
Acceptable drugs.
No. It's like cocaine and stuff. I'm right, not talking about like prescription pills.
Right. But it's not like dirty heroin or anything right. or crack yeah. even, which right. is right, cocaine.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Right.
Wow, exciting. I feel like I could talk to you much more than this, but we have to wrap it up.
Thank you.
But very exciting new job, and the book is coming along.
Yeah, it's coming along. So look for that. And I'm also developing a show at Caveat Theater called History, A Whore's Eye View, 10,000 Years of Sex Work History in 60 Minutes. And of course, listen to the podcast, The Oldest Profession.
When is the show going up?
Great question. It's on its feet for the first time February 7th, but it's not open to the public until after that.
Cool. It'll be on your website.
It'll be on my website. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. So follow me. Sorry. Is this the time for plugs? Is that what we're doing?
You can plug, but I'm going to put a link in the show notes.
Great. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter, Caitlin Bailey. It's spelled weird. And you can follow the podcast, Old Pro Podcast, and you'll eventually be able to follow Decriminalized Sex Work once we get, our ducks in a row enough for you to be on Twitter. We're still a very new organization. Our website isn't up yet.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.